All right, so we're up to the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, and the Mishnah here, I'm going to read the Mishnah first without filling it, I'm just going to translate, but then we have to go back and try to figure out what's going on, because there is a little bit, the Gemara has a comment, and the Rishonim have their own debate about certain parts of the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah says, Elu Asurin ve'osrin b'chol shehu. The following are Asur, and these all happen to be Asur not only to eat, but also to get any kind of hana from, and they are Asur other things b'chol shehu, meaning obviously in a taroves in some type of a mixture. Now, we saw in the previous Mishnah things that were Asur and Oser b'mashehu, and the things in the previous Mishnah were Yayin Nesach and Mayim Nesach. And both obviously are Isurim of Avodah Zarah. So, the Mishnah says as follows. Yei Nesach, so we just saw that in the previous Mishnah. Va'avodas Kochavim. Avodas Kochavim presumably means actual idols. Then, Ve'oros Levuvin. You may or may not remember, we encountered Oros Levuvin a while ago, when in the second Perek, in talking about those things that are Asur, Bachila, Asur, Bahana. So Oros Levuvin is like from Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom. Oros Levuvin is when there's like a hole, a circular hole cut out where the heart of the animal is. I don't know when they took the heart of the animal out. Some of you may remember that scene in the Temple of Doom. Yes. Ben, you saw it? Oh, okay, good. See, you've given him proper chinuch, even though the movie's long before his time. But it's proper yudius. So Oros Levuvin, the fact that it has the cutout by the heart, whatever exactly their ritual was, indicates that the animal was used for Avodah Zarah. Now, I presume when you have Oros Levuvin or Oser B'chol Shehu, it must be in a way at this point where you can no longer recognize which one had the circular cutout. Otherwise, if you have a bunch of Oros here, and one, you can look at each one and tell whether, in fact, it is Levuv, or not. So it means that it got mixed together in a way that you can't tell them apart. Then, Vishor HaNiskol. Vishor HaNiskol can be one of a few things. It means literally a shor that was stoned to death. It doesn't mean that people got upset at the shor and killed it. It means that the shor committed a crime. The shor's crime was either killing a human being, or it was engaged, it was used in a sexual act by a human being, either Roveya or Nirva. Those are the situations in which the Torah says that you stone the animal. So that's Asur Bahana. The Torah says by Shor HaNiskol, Sakol Yisakel HaShor, the Shor shall certainly be stoned, Velo Ye Ochel Es Bisaro, and its meat shall not be eaten, Uval HaShor Naki, and the way Chacham, in one interpretation of Val HaShor Naki, we say, Yatza Ploni Naki Menachasav, he went out stripped of his assets. So Val HaShor Naki means he has nothing left out of this. The shor is assumed to be Asur Bahana. From the moment, well, I'll leave it at that. So the shor haniskol, you have a bunch of dead oxen here. One of them was stoned to death because it killed a person, and the others were just, I guess you can't tell that it was stoned to death. So shor haniskol is on this list. Then egla arufa. Egla arufa is when you find a person who was killed, and the murderer is unknown. And they go through the ceremony of measuring to the closest city. The city brings this this female, I guess it's not a heifer. Is it a heifer? What's the equivalent of a calf, Marshall? Female calf. I mean, you got to know this. Come on, you're always, come on, you can look it up.
A calf is not male.
Okay, fine. Fine. So you take the female calf and they break its neck from behind. Actually, technically speaking, an egla arufa, where do you hit the egla arufa? I was like, point this out to my students. What does it mean to be an Am Kishe Oref? They say stiff-necked people, but I believe the translation is wrong. The Oref is not the neck. The Oref is the back of the head. Because when you do Malika, on a bird that's brought as a karban, so the Kohanim has to grow their thumbnails long, and they would go through the back of the neck and cut the spine and then the simanim. So the Torah describes as umolakes rosho, he shall do malika, mimul orpo. Not me orpo, but mimul orpo. And what is the opposite anyway of oref? Vayifnu elai oref velo fanim. The opposite of the face is the back of the head, not the back of the neck. The opposite, if you want the opposite back of the neck, They would mean that they turn my oref and not the tzavor. So bottom line is, I'm pretty sure that oref means the back of the head, which means an egla arufa, you hit it on the back of the head, which would make sense anyway. That's the place you want to whack them on the brainstem in order to kill them. So the egla arufa, once you do it, is aser bahana'a. And then sipore mitzora. When a mitzora has been locked up, and now he's going through the purification process, so the first step is to bring two birds, and it's going to be a week waiting period after this, but the first of the two birds, the Kohen shechts one of them over container of Mayim Chayim, of spring water, and he's going to use that water for sprinkling. The other bird, when he's finished with the process, he sets to go free. So that other bird, the Gemara assumes you're allowed to get hana'ah from. There's a question of how do you know that the second bird is mutter if somehow you catch it. To me, the most obvious and intuitive one is Rava's position, which is if the second bird were aser b'hana'ah, the Torah would never have said to send it out to go free, because it's an invitation for somebody to end up taking it, not knowing that it's one of the birds of a mitzorah. So the second bird, the living bird, is fine, but the dead bird, the one that the Kohen shechted, that is aser b'hana'ah, you bury it to get rid of it. So that's what tziporim mitzorah referred to. It's the plural here is not the tziporim of one mitzorah. It's a tziporim from different mitzorayim. V'seyar na'usar nazir, and the hair of a nazir. So what does a nazir do? After he finishes his nazirus period, he has to shave his hair off. What does he do with the hair? So the Torah says, v'nasan al ha'esh, asher tachas zebach ha'shlamim. In fact, for those who were doing Dafyomi, who did Meseches Midos, so one of the rooms in the Ezras Nashim, one of the four corner rooms, but maybe it's from a different place, was known as the Lishkas Nazirim, and that's where the Nazirim would cook their shlamim, and they would put their hair, burn it on the fire underneath, because the hair of a Nazir is considered Kodesh, it's Aser B'hanah. So Seir Nazir is Aser, and it's Oser B'chol Shehu. Then, Petar Chamor. I'm pretty sure, I don't know, have any of you ever seen the ceremony of Petar Chamor? I'm told that it's been done, people have done it in Israel. If you have a firstborn Bechor of a donkey, anybody in the shul own any donkeys? No. What?
Jonathan, my firstborn.
Owns a donkey?
No.
What's that?
He is the donkey.
You know, Lenny, this is recorded for posterity. Adrian, do we have any rejoinder here? Okay.
Some guys owned a donkey, actually, at one point when they were in Israel.
Okay, so, and they probably did it just so they could have a Petar Chamor. So the firstborn of a donkey requires, you have two options. Upetar Chamor Tifteh B'Seh, you redeem it with a Seh, and the truth is the redemption can be done with other things also, but typically it's done with a Seh, and the imlo sifteh, but if you refuse to, and the seh is given to a kohen, you don't want to give the kohen a seh, you don't not want to spend that, then imlo sifteh va'arafto, you do arifa, like you did on the egla arufa, you do arifa on the chamor, which is obviously, anybody who would do that under normal circumstances is engaged in what we call Samson-like behavior. The Gemara has this idea, it's in a Mishnah, in Yevamos. We say normally, chachamim were lenient if a woman comes back and says, if one witness comes and says that a woman's husband died, so we rely upon the testimony of one witness. And if a woman comes and says her husband died, we believe her also and she's allowed to remarry. There are only five women are not believed to testify about a particular woman that her husband died. Those five women are her mother-in-law, her stepmother, her sister-in-law. You can imagine this, what I learned from the Tom and Jerry cartoons, that the mother-in-law cabinet had the skull and crossbones on it. So apparently it was long known before. And I have a very good relationship with my mother-in-law, thank you. But nonetheless, at least the stereotypical relationship. So they're not believed. But the most amazing one of the five who's not believed is Tsarasa. Tsarasa means the rival wife. Meaning if one man had two wives, one wife comes back and says that the husband died, and if she, not sure she just says it, she remarries. Now part of the issue is that if a woman married, even accidentally, because one witness said her husband died, there are all sorts of penalties, financial penalties. She has to get divorced from the second husband. She can't, if her first husband turns out to be alive, she can't go back to him. So the Chachamim were relying upon the fact that the woman will do her own investigation to be absolutely sure her husband is dead, and that's why they were lenient in this Aguna case. So here you have a case here, man is two wives, one wife comes back, and she remarries based on her own testimony. We still don't allow the other wife to remarry. Why? Well, you would say, come on, if the woman just says that her husband died, maybe she's looking for her husband's alive, she wants her rival wife to remarry, and then the husband comes back, and the rival wife has to get divorced. But if she herself goes ahead and do it, she's messing herself over. So the Gemara says, no, it's possible she's lying anyway, so why does she do it? Tamos nafshi implishtim. That just to get her rival wife, that she rival married to the husband, she'll mess herself over too. Right now, it's taken from, it's not really a good analogy to Shimshon. Shimshon was going to be killed anyway. He was living a miserable life. So he brought the house down, literally, upon himself and upon a whole bunch of Philistines. But that philosophy of Tamos nafshi and plishtim is cutting off your nose to spite your face. So the only reason why a person, presumably, would choose to do arifa on a peter chamor is because they really just didn't want to give the kohen the seh. The donkey is much more valuable than the seh, but that would be cutting off your nose to spite your face, or which is cutting off its neck to spite your face. In Eretz Yisrael, I presume they use a seh. They use a sheep to redeem. They presumably give it to the kohen. I'd hope so. So I don't know how many donkeys there are in Eretz Yisrael and how many peter chamors there are. But it truly would apply in Chutz Laretz too, but, you know, as I think we've done the survey already, and there don't seem to be any donkey owners in KJ, so, or at least that are known, so.
So you think it's like you can just literally pick a kollel and say, here's a set, like a bottle of farm. I mean, there are lots of farmers left in Israel.
Right? Yes.
You just randomly pick any kollel?
Yeah. It's one of the 24 Matnos Kahuna, is the set, the Pidyon Peter Chamor. See? Okay. See, that's proof. Adrian Shteinmaker Vachatargum. Because we're going to do it in Chumash and Rashi, and we'll see. And Rashi will, the Torah says it, you don't need the Rashi, but. Okay. So that's Peter Chamor. Then Ubasar Bechalav. So this is interesting. Basar Bechalav is, as Rashi points out here, Basar Bechalav is Asar Bahana, and it's Oser Bimashahu, any amount of it. And then the last one is taken out, and I'm not sure why. The Sar HaMishtaleach is removed from it. It's hard to imagine Asar HaMishtaleach getting mixed up with other Se'irim. The Gra has a comment here. And I don't know. I'll profess my ignorance, and I haven't researched this. When does a Asar HaMishtaleach become Asar Bahana? So the truth is, it's initially presumably prohibited in Hana because it's Hektish. Right? You take two Se'irim, you're Makdish them. The Kohen takes them in Yom Kippur. One will become a Korban, and one of them will be eventually used for the Sari Lazazel. Now, presumably, the reason why they take Sari Lazazel out is because Sari Lazazel, when it's alive, is not Aser because it's Sari Lazazel. Presumably, it's Aser because it's Kachim. Once the rule by Kachim generally is that Kol Davar Shanaseis Mitzvaso Ein Mo'alin Bo. If you have something that you're supposed to do a mitzvah with Hekdesh, once you do the mitzvah, there's no longer an Isser de Oraisa. It might be Midrabanan, but a scriptural prohibition no longer exists to get any benefit, with two exceptions. One of them is the Trumas Hadeshim, when the Kohanim remove the ashes every morning from the Mizbeach. Even though they've done the mitzvah, they've removed it from the Mizbeach, you're not allowed to get benefit from that. I forget what the other one is. What's the other one? I should know. But generally speaking, once you've done the mitzvah with something, it should normally be mutter b'hana, unless the Torah tells you, egla rufa is the other one. After you've done the mitzvah arifa, the egla is still aser b'hana. So,
this is interesting because if it was allocated for the searing, the two searing, mm-hmm. if they had a gum, you have to change them. The ones that were initially dedicated, now...
Yes, but that requires pidyon. In other words, yes. But once you do the pidyon, it's mutter b'hana. But here we're talking, presume what they're talking about, the Sar HaMishtaleach, the comment I just see in the Gra, sounds like if it... What do they do with the Sar HaMishtaleach? You know, so the pshat is you just send the goat free. But the tradition is that you send it free over the cliff. So the only thing that was left to become mixed in with anything else are pieces. Right? The Gemara says it hadn't even made its way halfway down the tzuk by the time it was nasis evarim evarim. So the gra, at least in taking it out, it seems to be that you never have a case of a regular sar hamishtaleach that the Mishnah would be talking about unless it was already pieces. So I could imagine today, by the way, I it would not be beyond my imagination the way things have gone, that there would be people who would be trying to hunt down pieces of Sarah Mishtaleach as a segula for something. Not sure for what, yeah, but for something.
But it's nimchak, right?
What?
He says nimchak.
No, the Gra takes it out, presumably because it's hard. What's your case where you're dealing with a Sarah Mishtaleach? So I don't know exactly why. He says it's possible it's dealing with Evarim. Not a whole goat, but pieces. Okay, so the Mishnah concludes by repeating. I'm sorry, one more thing. The chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, which is interesting. Chulin shenishchatu ba'azara means you're not allowed to take an animal and do shchita on it in the azara if it's not a karban, inside the Yisrael Ezras Kohanim, the temple courtyard. Just as we have a prohibition of shchutei chutz, you're not allowed to take an animal that has been consecrated for sacrificial purposes and bring it outside of the azara, that, so too, you're not allowed to take something from that's chulin that belongs outside and bring it inside and shecht it there. Now, in case you're wondering, how do you know that you're not allowed to shecht the carbon outside of the azara? So I choose this example to go back to the beginning of our discussion, Shnei Mikveh HaTargum. For me, this was rather illuminating. It's a pasuk in Chumash. Unfortunately, on Yom Kippur, we read the first chapter of Achrimos and the last chapter of Achrimos, and we don't read the middle 16 psukim. But the middle 16 psukim deal with the prohibition primarily of shrutei chutz and kisui hadam. Shrutei chutz means you're not allowed to shecht the carbon outside. If you do, it says if you spilled blood in your chayiv kares, and when you shecht a chaya or an oaf. Not of a karban, not a behema, not a cow, goat, or sheep, but you shecht the deer, you shecht the gazelle, or you shecht the bird, you have to cover the blood. You have to do kisur hadam. So those two mitzvos are psukim in the Chumash. So shchutei chutz is explicit in the Torah. The prohibition of chulin ba'azara is not explicit in the Torah, which raises the possibility, is it really an issur d'oraisa, or is it only a rabbinic prohibition? And that is discussed in a number of places in Shas. Some want to say that chulin bazara, the prohibition is only the Rabbanon. Some would say that even though the prohibition is min haTorah, the prohibition of eating it and getting hana is only the Rabbanon. And some say that it's a complete, an absolute prohibition d'oraisa. Larry?
Would there anything that could be osur b'chamal shehu that wouldn't be osur itself? In other words, why is the Mishnah using, or is it just, you know...
Standard? So I can give you one example that's mutter by... Well, there are two examples of things that are mutter by themselves and they're osur b'chamal shehu. One's osur b'chamal shehu, the other is not. The one that's not osur b'chamal shehu, but is mutter by itself but makes it osur, is basur b'chalaf, where each one separately is mutter, but you mix one and it's mutter. But that...
That wouldn't...
That's not b'chol shehu.
Also, that wouldn't qualify for these cases because it's, you know, in other words, any of these things would be usher by itself, right?
Correct. I actually want to talk about that. Basapal Rashi quotes something from Rabbeim that he thinks is wrong, but there's only one thing I know of that's mutter by itself, but it's osir b'chol shehu. That's tzemer in pishtim. It's a fascinating question. How do you know? I apologize.
In other words, none of these cases in the Mishnah would qualify for that.
So. Well, Tzemer, in other words, everything here has to be usher in its own right, and then it also makes other things usher, right? Something that's mutter in its own right is by definition not in the Mishnah. I apologize because I'm literally I have so much overlap with what I'm teaching now here, and I'm teaching in Yoredeya at YU, so I don't know if I've spoken about this issue here, but it's an obvious question. If I have a garment that has linen and wool mixed together, and I can't find one or the other, Beged Sha'avad Bel Kilayim, so why don't I say that it's mutter because it's the bittel? Why don't you say that the pishtim is batel on the tzemer? Right? Every time you take except for by the suits, the guys know how to remove it, so it's not really a mixture. I think you can. We don't say that something is a taroves and is batel if it's not if you can sort it out. It has to be indistinguishable. But let's say the Gemara's case, begich avobokalayim, some linen got sewn in and you can't find where it is. So why don't you say that it's batel by definition? Now the fundamental answer is that it's the very... Normally, bittul exists only in situations where one of the things is asr and the rest of it is mutter, and you want to say that the issur no longer exists. When the whole prohibition stems from the combination of the two, then in principle it makes absolutely no sense to say that there can be bittul. There is that. That's the real answer. The reductio ad absurdum answer is that if that were true, the only way you could have an isser of shatnez is if you had exactly 50% wool and exactly 50% linen, and yet you couldn't sort it out. Because otherwise, definitionally speaking, the garment should be permissible because there's always more of one than the other. So, but that's not the real reason. The reason is because the nature of the prohibition is such is that it's the mixture that makes it usser. The other example, now we'll talk about it because Rashi quotes it from his Rabbeim and he says they're wrong. Some wanted to say, based upon this Mishnah by Basar B'chalav, that Basar B'chalav is oser b'mashehu, meaning what it means, what it really means is that if I have a piece of meat that is Basar B'chalav already, the milk flavored the meat, now it gets mixed in with other pieces of meat, and, you know, nobody, let's say, can tell the difference because those pieces of the meat were cooked with almond milk, so they taste virtually the same. Nobody can distinguish. So we say that there's no bittul on basar b'chalav. But Rashi's Rabbeim wanted to say, we can actually very quickly read it. If you look in the big Rashi on the Mishnah, it's the last Rashi, right where you see the daf kuf tes zayin amud aleph in parentheses, about the 6 lines into the Rashi. So Rashi says, "V'yesha lemeidim mi'mishnu asenu, debasar b'chalav b'mashehu." Now he'll explain what does that mean. Usvurin the high b'chol shehu dekatani. What does it mean that the osrin b'chol shehu? Kigon tipas chalav shenafla lekidera. If a drop of milk fell into a pot of meat, ochatichas basar kitana, or a piece, small piece of meat shenafla lekidera fell into a pot of milk, and you remove the piece of meat, but the meat put a little bit of flavor into the milk. Vafilu ein ba no sein tam. Even though the basar that had a drop of milk on it doesn't taste like basar b'chalav, or the milk that had the meat fall into it for a moment doesn't taste like basar, you know, meat flavored milk. There are those who wanted to say that's asar, and Rashi says v'taus hu biyadam. It's a complete error. Now they were trying to explain the Mishnah that way. The osrim b'chol shehu. Why? Why is it an error? So I'm not going to read the rest of the Rashi, but let me mention to you a Gemara in Chulin. The Svara, if you forget the Mishnah, forget any sugya, the reason why this is wrong is because it's against numerous Gemaras. But the logic behind it isn't crazy. It's could be the exact same logic by Shatnez. In other words, the uniqueness of Basar B'chalav is that a positive plus a positive yields a negative. That's what's odd about it. In fact, I think we've spoken numerous times about the principle of what's known as Chaticha Nases Nevela. Right, it means that, let's take the following example. I have a piece of meat, kosher meat, and a little bit of chazer schmaltz gets mixed into it. And it's blended in, and it flavors it. Okay, you're not allowed to eat the meat because you can taste the chazer in it. Now this piece of meat falls into a pot of a lot of other meat, regular kosher meat. And the question is, how do we determine bittul? Do we say that when we have this piece of meat with chaser schmaltz absorbed in it, do we say that basically it's still a kosher piece of meat that you can't eat because there's chaser schmaltz mixed in throughout it? And now when it falls into a large pot of meat, if there's enough meat in that pot, both the meat that's there originally plus the piece of meat that fell in, to nullify the taste of the chaser schmaltz, let's say I had one piece of meat, you know, one ounce of meat that gets a quarter of an ounce of chaser schmaltz that gets mixed into it, and you can taste it. Now this 1 1/4 ounces of stuff gets mixed into a pot of 59 ounces of kosher meat. So what do I have in this pot in the abstract? I have 1 1/4 ounce of chaser schmaltz. I have one piece of kosher meat. And, I did the math wrong. I got to come up with a better, what's that?
You need 14.
You need 14, let's say 14 pieces. Good, that's 14 ounces of kosher meat. I have an ounce of kosher meat that's mixed with the chaser schmaltz, and I have 1/4 ounce of chaser schmaltz. So in sum total, I have 15 ounces of kosher meat and 1/4 ounce, which is 1/60 of the meat, of chaser schmaltz. So do we say, now you have shishim, and it's all batel? Or do we say, no, that when the 1/4 ounce of chaser schmaltz originally made this one piece of meat usser, the entire meat has been transformed into isser, and now, how much do you need in the pot in order to be mevatelit? You need 75 ounces, right? You need 60 times 1 1/4 ounce. Now, the answer to that question, as we pointed out, it's a machlokas harishonim, but everybody agrees, min haTorah, you don't say chaticha nasis nebela. You don't say that that entire piece of meat really becomes all iser. You say it's a mixture, it's a piece of meat you can't eat because you're going to taste the chazer in it. But in the abstract, min haTorah, we look at it as really iser and heter still standing next to one another. The only exception where everybody agrees it's aser, again, some Rishonim say, most Rishonim say, you don't say chaticha nasis nebela at all, not even midrabanan, by all other prohibitions. But there's one prohibition. One prohibition that everybody agrees you say chaticha nasis nevela in min haTorah, and that's basar b'chalav. And the reason is because on their own, each one is permissible. So when the two get mixed together, what are you going to say? That it's two things of heter. So if I take a piece of meat and that got flavored with milk, one ounce of meat that got flavored with a quarter ounce of milk, now, in order to be, that becomes basar b'chalav, in order to make that batal, I need 75 pieces. No question, 75 ounces, not a question whatsoever. So logically speaking, I could have looked at los vashel gediba chalavimo the same way as you look at shatnez and to say, oh, you can't tell me this bittel here by tam, because after all, they're both heter to start with. So it's the combination that the Torah prohibits. That presumably, the default option, in fact, the default option is the Torah prohibits any amount combined. Why then do we say that in order for basar b'chalav to become prohibited, you have to be able to taste one and the other? The Gemara in Chulin says, in the name of Rava, the Torah says, lo sivashel gedi, and bishul implies tam. But it's exeris akasuv that basar b'chalav requires nesinas tam, because on our own, we might have said it's just like shatnez. Anyway, Rashi quotes such a tradition from his rabbeim, but there are those who say that way, and Rashi says it's wrong. That's not what the Mishnah means here. The Mishnah doesn't mean that basar b'chalav is nesar b'mashu, that a mashu of milk makes a pot of meat osir. It means once you have basar b'chalav, this basar b'chalav is osir b'mashu. Marshall?
Why isn't it the case, you know, 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks ago we discussed what I sort of think of as like the resurrection move, right? Where?
Yes.
Why isn't it the case that you say that had the chazer shmaltz originally fallen into Abatel B'shishim, that when the new piece goes in, the original one separates itself out again, and you only need the original shear. Why do you need the bigger shear as if the original corrupted piece is itself entirely usher? Why doesn't the same...
You mean, you're asking why don't you say the inverse of Chazra V'Neora? Right, so that
asymmetrical?
So that's exactly... I mean, that's the Gemara's point. So firstly, Chazra V'Neora remember itself as a controversy. But it happens to be the most we've shown him. Right. So the Ravid could... You know, it's funny that you say that. I've never worked this through. But the Ravid goes in the opposite direction. The Ravid actually claims that Chaticha Nasis Nevela, even by Basar... Remember, Chaticha Nasis Nevela is a machlokas in the Gemara. I told you everybody agrees that you say Chaticha Nasis Nevela by Basar Chalav. I mean, all of the Rishonim agree, the way we paskin. The Gemara itself presents it as a major machlokas amoraim, with, you know, Rav, Rabbi Yochanan, and I think Rabbi Chanina on one side, and Shmuel Reish Lakish, and I forget who on the other side. So when I say everybody agrees, I mean our maskana. In the Shulchan Aruch, there's no Rishon that I'm aware of who says, except for one, the Ravid, who says that we don't paskin Chanan, by Basar B'chalav at least. The Ravid Shita also is that you don't say Chazer V'Neora, but so it's exactly the exact reverse. So the question is, you want to know why, if you're going to say, why don't you say... If you say Chazra V'Neora, the simple answer, all right, I owe you an answer, which I may not be able to find. It's a good question. I'm tempted to say that we treat, and it may be tautological, this may be the basis for saying it, that there's a difference between Isser being transformed into Heter and Heter being transformed into Isser.
No, agree. As I said, if asymmetry may make sense, but there needs to be a justification.
I'm feeling that the distinction is obvious. Not that it's not a good question, but I think that the answer is that basar b'chalav, it's precisely this particular point. We normally would never say Probably, we would always say that you normally follow ta'am. And we would say chazra v'neora, and we would say that you don't say chaticha nasis nevela. Right? That's what you're suggesting. And I think that's fundamentally correct. That's the way most Rishonim hold. Chanan is limited to basar b'chalav. Basar b'chalav would be the exception precisely because the whole nature of the prohibition is that you're taking two positive things and doing something with them. And let me add the following. I don't know if you could come up with a case to test this. Basar b'chalav, once it becomes asar, is like every other isser. Meaning, once it's nases, basar b'chalav, so it's not treated any differently than chazir, let's say. It gets mixed into a pot, it follows the same rules of bittul. It's only in the process of becoming basar b'chalav that it has that unique situation. The answer is that by all other isurim al pi din Torah, we say chazir v'ne'ora, and we don't say chanan. Right? We say that once you diffuse the taste, it will be mutter, and that's consistent. And basar b'chalav is probably exceptional just because of precisely this issue. Oh, yes.
I thought that there, and maybe it's Chachariyali Kabeh, that it's Osir B'mashahu, and that if it falls into a pot of meat, you're lost. You lose.
So, well, hold on one second, because that's what the Gemara is going to talk about in a second. Now, take a look at Rashi for a moment on the Mishnah. Rashi says, on Yayin Esach, the second line, Rashi says, Chavis be'elef chavios. Rashi says it's not liquid wine that gets mixed into other wine, kosher wine. It's actually a barrel of Yayin Esach that gets mixed up among barrels of Yayin kosher. Then, Va'avodas kochavim, Rashi writes, Tzura she'avduha, an image that they worshipped, Vinis arba be'elef tsurosh, enam avodas kochavim. Rashi speaks about not something blended together in the sense of you have, you know, avodah. What's that? He talks about a yavesh b'yavesh, where you have discrete items being blended. And then v'oros levuvin, the havinami isurihano. That's all he says about it. So why does Rashi say that? So he says it because the Gemara has a particular take on what's going on in the Mishnah. Why are these the only isurim listed in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Tana maika hoshev. What is the Tana when he's giving us a list of things that are prohibited on their own, and they make everything that they fall into, no matter how much they make them usher as well. What is his criteria for being included in the Mishnah? E davar shebeminyan kachashiv. If he's talking about a davar shebeminyan means something that has chashivus, significance on its own. And the argument is, because it's a davar chashiv, you cannot say that it's batel. Let me, before we talk further, read further in the Gemara, I want to just step back and make an observation. We've touched upon over the last years a number of these concepts on a number of occasions of things that the normal rules of Bittul don't apply to. For example, and it's relevant right here, the issue of beria. If you have a bug, any living creature, okay, now it's dead, but that gets mixed in with other stuff, so we say that there's no Bittul. We say whole, yes. If you have a chaticha haruya liskabe, you have a steak, a nice steak, a filet mignon, and it gets mixed in. One is treif, and it gets mixed in with 1,000 other kosher filet mignons. There's no bittul. The Mishnah in Orla talks about what is classically called officially a davar shebeminyan, things that are only sold by number. The Mishnah talks about what exactly that is. Rabbi Meir has a very broad definition. Rabbi Meir says that if you knitted one garment using a needle, a wooden needle of orla, that the garment now has hana'ah from the orla in it, and the entire garment is asur. You dyed it with coloring from fruits of orla. The entire garment is asur. Or you stitched it with the needles made from Avodah Zarah wood, and you stitched it. The entire garment is asur. And Rabbi Meir says if that garment got mixed in with other garments and is indistinguishable, you have to burn them all. They're all asur b'hana'ah. Why? Let's say it's 1,000 garments or 60 garments. Why did you say bittul? So Rabbi Meir's understanding, the Chachamim agree in principle and disagree in the details, is that sometimes an object has such significance that you simply cannot apply you can't say that it's batel. Why? this to me is, these things, by the way, are all rabbinic in nature. All these situations that we say that something is not batel, it's only midrabanan. What's striking to me, and I formulated this to my students at Yeshiva recently, is that normally we think of dinam derabanan as kind of, often, as gzeros. That you would think it is, you don't say bittel here, because if you say bittel here, then you'll come to say it here where it's really not batel. But given that every one of these things is derabanan, that doesn't make any sense. If you're concerned about people making an error number, you should say there's never bittel. And it occurred to me that this is an unusual circumstance where the chachamim, where it's completely midrabanan, but it's essentially taking the values that underlie the Torah's principle here, and creating dinam derabanan around that. What bittul means is that the entity that got mixed in, and we normally say, we use taste as the criteria, that you can no longer taste, it's a minority in volume, and you can no longer taste it. We say it's as if the substance no longer exists, and when you're eating the entire mixture, it's not as if you've eaten the iser, because the iser is avar ubatel min ha'olam, it's gone from the world. The Chachamim have said that some certain entities in our lived experience have such chashivos on their own, that even though you can't taste them, you can't discern them, you cannot say that they no longer exist. They still exist wherever they are. And if you benefit from them or you eat them, it is as if, midrabanan, you have eaten the iser. That's the only way I can explain these halachos, unless somebody is to come up with the one case where min haTorah we don't say bittul because something is so chashiv. I don't know what that case is. Maybe it's just slipping my mind. But we have we have our general rules that we've explored many times of bittul, that we use shishim as the general criteria. Sometimes it's required min haTorah, sometimes it's only required midrabanan. Except there are a whole bunch of things that are just not batel because they have either chashivas, or because even though you can't taste them, it's as if they're still there. The examples in that latter category is cheese and bread made with yeast of truma. Right, we say that cheese, if the rennet is treif, can you taste the rennet? The answer is absolutely not. How much rennet do you have in your cheese? Less than 1/1000th, maybe. Certainly you don't have 1/60th. You can't taste it, but because the rennet transforms the milk into cheese, it's as if the rennet is there. You can't say, oh, the rennet is batel. What do you mean? The rennet is batel. It's staring me in the face. I see cheese. Right? I'm looking at bread, leavened bread. I'm not looking at masa. So sometimes the chachamim just say, things are there. You can't say that the iser is no longer in the world because it's actually there.
I don't actually think that's the right way to think about it. I think the question is, what do you consider tam? And when you actually add yeast to dough or you add rennet to milk, the texture and the protein strands and the peptides, it's a radically different taste than it would be without it. So even though it's not a taste like spice or milk would be, it's still absolutely tam.
But Marshall, here's the crucial point. The issue is not whether your heter tastes differently, it's whether you taste the iser. In other words, when you have, for example, something like nosein tam lefgam, so that's a case where the taste of the food is there, and you can even somehow taste, you're tasting the iser, but it's had a negative impact on the food, and we say that it's mutter. So it's not the transformation of the food that you're talking about that makes it aser. It's actually tasting the iser. The way that we show them talk about it, it's, in other words, the point they emphasize, and that's why it's only midrabanan. Right? You're explaining it so well that I could claim it's an iser daraisa. There is a Magen Avraham somewhere who makes some type of a claim, but we don't assume that way. We assume that min haTorah, to be aser, you have to be able to taste the iser. And if you can't taste the iser, it's if it's not there. Midrabanan, we say, because the iser has transformed, in this case, the taste or the appearance, right? There's discussion of coloring also. Let's say you can see it colors something, even though you can't taste it. Because the iser's impression, impact upon the heter, is discernible, it's as if it's still be'olam. That seems to be the idea. So I would love to know what the ke'en to oraisa would be of this. What's the case of the Torah law where it's not bittul? The only case I know in our Torah where something is not batul by the normal rules, and we've explored this, is that it's a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda says min b'mino is not batul. It's by the blood of the two karbanos on Yom Kippur, the Dam HaPar and the Dam HaSar. We don't pass like Rabbi Yehuda, but the Chachamim say olin are not mevatlin zo. Things that are brought on the Mizbeach cannot be mevatel one another. In other words, there's no bittul whatsoever. But I'm not really sure how analogous, why that should be the basis of any of the things that we are machmir on. Okay. So the Gemara assumes, though, from the get-go, that the Mishnah is listing things that are a davar shebeminyan. That it's not any, let's say you have a nazir, and he cut off his hair, and a few loose hairs get mixed into a pile of other hairs. They want to use this for making shetels. This is, you know, he went to an ashram, and he shaved his hair off there. Okay. It doesn't matter where a nazir shaves his hair. His hair is asur b'ano. So he has his hair. A little bit of hair gets mixed in the pile. That's not what's asur. It's not a case of hairs getting with other hairs. It's when you have bundles. Let's say hair perhaps has been bundled, and they're sold by the bundle. And now you have one bundle of seir nazir that gets mixed into other bundles of hair. That is a davar chashiv. That's a davar shebeminyan, right? Because then when you go into the stall, they sell it. Oh, you can buy, you know, 10 bundles of hair, you know, a bundle of hair for $10, 11 for $100. But it's sold by the bundle. That's called a davar shebeminyan. So the Gemara says that e davar shebeminyan kachashiv, if the Tana is counting only davar shebeminyan as his criteria for that which is never batel, meaning one bundle of hair into 10,000 amnazir, into 10,000 bundles of hair that are mutter, all aser, then lesne name chatichas nevela. Why didn't he count if you have a filet mignon of a nevela, and that's a davar shebeminyan, that's a davar chashuv, that's actually what we call a chaticha haru'ya liskabed, why doesn't he count this chaticha from a nevela? And now, how do we know, in fact, that it's not might not be batel? Because it's a Mishnah Chulin. The Mishnah Chulin in Perek Yid Anasha on Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Beis, after talking about cooking a hindquarters with the gid inside, the Mishnah then says that gid shenisbashelim hagidim, if you cook a gid hanasha with other gidim, so if you recognize which is the gid hanasha, then you remove that, throw it away, and if you have shishim in the rest of the pot to be mevatel the gid hanasha, then it's mutter. Then the Mishnah. Yes, Marshall.
I thought we discussed 2 months ago that there was a whole machloket about the gid and whether you actually could debane it and whether it only made us or the flesh.
The Mishnah, Marshall, you know that there's a machlokas in the Gemara whether yesh begid ben osein tam, whether the gid itself has any flavor. The Mishnah is the Gemara comments on the Mishnah. The Gemara says that the Tana of the Mishnah holds yesh begid ben osein tam. Yes, that is one opinion. Yes, you remember correctly. So then the Mishnah says the following. But let's say I cook the one gid anasha with other gidin, which are mutter, other sinews or nerves, whatever they are in the body that are mutter, but I don't recognize which is the gid anasha. So the Mishnah says, the soup in the pot, which is clearly not the gid, is b'no sein tam. If there's enough in the pot, both in the other gidin and in the liquid that's accumulated, whatever else you put in the pot, to be mevatel the tam of that gid, then you can eat the soup, but you can't eat any of the gidin. Why? Because one of those gidin is the gid hanasha. Then, the Mishnah says, v'chein chatichas nevela, v'chein chatichas dag tameh. You have a piece of meat of nevela, or of a dag tameh, of non-kosher species of fish, and it gets cooked with other chatichos in a pot. The same rule applies, that if you recognize which was the treif piece of meat or the non-kosher piece of fish, then you throw that one away and you evaluate if you had 60 times in the rest of the pot, you can eat everything else. If you can't recognize which is the piece of nevela or the piece of the non-kosher fish, then for everything else in the pot, not the pieces, you apply the same rule. Do you have shishim keneged the one piece? But all the pieces you're not allowed to eat. So both cases, the Gemara asks a question by gid hanasha and by the chatichas nevela, why don't you say bittul barof? Why don't you say that the gid, that if you can't recognize which is the gid, but you had shishim combined with everything against that gid, or say the nevela, why not say bittul? So that's where the Gemara says that the reason why the gid is not batel is because it's a beria. Don't ask why, it's considered a whole living thing, however you define beria. And the reason why the chaticha of nevela is not batel is you're dealing with a chaticha haruya l'skabed. It doesn't mean you have some chopped meat that gets thrown into the pot. You have a filet mignon, you have a nicely cut steak, and it gets mixed in with a bunch of other steak, pieces of steak, and you can't tell the difference. There, you don't say bittul. Now, forget about gid for the moment, but talking about chatichas nevela. Nevela and non-kosher fish. Nevela is the animal, kosher animal that wasn't shechted properly or had no shechit at all. So nevela is mutter b'hana. You're allowed to get benefit from it. You're just not allowed to eat it. So that's what the Gemara asks here. If the Tan of our Mishnah believes that the criteria for not having bittel by yavesh by yavesh, by discrete things that are blended together, not chopped up, ground up, blended, if the criteria is davar shebeminyan, and this means very broadly, anything which has innate significance that you can't say it's no longer there, then why doesn't he count the vela as the Mishnah has in Chulin? And e isurei hanaka chashiv, but if the Tana believes that the issue in our Mishnah, the reason why these things are not batal, is not because they have chashivus, but because they're aser b'hana. In other words, this Tana believes, anytime something is aser b'hana, there's no bittul for it. The only time we say bittul is for isurei achila. So then, lisnei name chametz b'pesach, why did he leave out the isur chametz and pesach, which is aser b'hana? Now, just an observation here. Why would you distinguish in the rules of bittul between isurei achila, those things that you only can't eat, and those things which you can't get hana? Why would you say that there's bittul by one, but there's no bittul by the other?
Because it's much worse.
Okay, but then you could also make a distinction, let's say, between bittul of chazir and bittul of dam. That chazir is only an iser lo saseh, so maybe chazir should be batel, but dam, which is orchela, which are mutar b'hana, maybe those who should say are not batel. But we don't suggest such a distinction. So the stringency of the prohibition itself doesn't seem to be the driver. But if you're worried about hefseid mamon, then why not say it by isurei hana, something that's asar b'hana that gets mixed in as well? Right? And as you, presumably that would be the reason why we accept bittul. So I thought the answer, the Gemara doesn't accept this in the end. I don't understand why, actually. But I would say the following. When I have a piece of chazir that gets mixed into kosher meat, some chazir schmaltz, and it's mixed in, it's blended up, and I can't taste it. The question I ask you is, did I eat the chazir schmaltz? So the way I determine, did I eat it, the reason why most of us eat things is because they taste good. Right? We generally tend to avoid eating things that don't taste good. And we try to make our food that we have to eat taste good, whatever we have to do if it's important for us to eat it. So my question is, did you eat the chazir? The answer is no, because if you eat something, you usually taste it. But when it comes to hana'a, so let's say I had one piece of, I don't know, whatever is asa of chametz that got mixed in with a whole bunch of other things. So when I ate the 61 pieces of the chametz, or the 61 pieces including the hana'a, my stomach benefited from. Another, I didn't taste the iser, but I'm fuller than I would have been otherwise. And therefore, one might have said that there is no bittul by isurei hana'a. And even though this is not true, because the Gemara will assume there is bittul, it's something that sometimes we do accept to some extent. What do you do? We're going to see it, not today, at the end of this Amud, in the next Mishnah. What do you do when one chavis gets mixed in? One chavis of Yayin Nesach gets mixed in with 60 chavios of Yayin Kasher. For those who say that you can get hana, you know what you have to do? You sell 61 for the price of 60. In other words, I'm allowed to sell them. I can't drink them for whatever reason. I sell them, and I get the benefit from only 60 of them. Right? That makes sense. So I would have assumed that when you have isuri hana that get mixed in, that you're not able to...
finish it. Just
what's that?
60 first of it.
What's that?
Don't finish it. Leave like a...
So that if you were eating, correct. I would say you have to take out part and you have to throw it away. That's what I would say you have to do. Okay. Fine. So the Gemara says, if the criteria is Yisurei Hana, so why not count Chametz B'Pesach? And it's not in the list. So the Gemara says the following. Obviously, Amar b'chi bar Abba v'itema Rab Yitzchak nafcha haitana tarti islay davar shebeminyan v'isurei hana. Now, in order for it not to be batel, this Tana believes that two criteria are required. Number one, it has to be aser b'hana, and number two, it has to be a davar shebeminyan. The simple reading of this Gemara then is that what if you had something like nevela, filet mignon of a nevela, which was a davar shebeminyan, but it wasn't the Isurei Hana. What would happen if it got mixed in with anything else? What would you say the halacha should be? It should be batel.
Yeah.
And what if I came up with something which was Asr Bahana, but wasn't the Davar Shebaminyan? It would also be Batal. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. And it's for this reason that the Rishonim explained that the Rif omits the din of Beria and Chaticha Haruya Liskabed. There is one Shita in Rishonim that doesn't paskin that Beria is a problem. For all the tumult over the New York City water and the copepods, again, it's a minority opinion, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't accept it, although the Aruch HaShulchan might quote it as one of the Snifim Lahakel to defend Minag Yisrael, is the Rif believes that Beria is Betela and that Chaticha Ruiy Liskabed is Betela. Why? Because this Sugya, this Mishnah, doesn't accept the same principle that the Mishnah in Chulin, or the way the Gemara in Chulin seems to interpret that Mishnah. In other words, the Rif says there's a machlokas hasugyos between Avodah Zarah daf Ayin Dalet Aleph and Chulin daf Kuf Amud Aleph. And for some reason, I don't know what the Rif's reason, we paskin like the Mishnah and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and therefore Beria is Betela and Chaticha Ruiy Liskabed are Betelim when they are Mutar Bahana, when the Isser is only an Isser Achila. That's the way the Rif understands. And that actually, now, how might you reject the risk? We do reject the risk position, at least as a single issue considered. We assume that Beria is not Betela. We assume that Chaticha Haru'uya Liskabed is also not Betela. Now, how might one come to that conclusion? So there are two ways of reaching that conclusion. Possibility one is to say, oh, yeah, it's a machlokas between our sugya and the Gemara in Chulin. And guess what? We paskin like the Gemara in Chulin. The end. That's one way. The other way is to try to pull what Tosos pulls here. And Tosos wants to say, no. The Tana of the Mishnah doesn't actually list it, but not because he doesn't necessarily hold of it. In other words, I was sitting around, and I'm listing great baseball players. And I say Jacob deGrom, and I say Max Scherzer, and I say Strasburg. And then you say to me, how come you don't count, you know, Aaron Judge? So you'll say the Tana's only counting pitchers. Now, am I suggesting that only pitchers are great players? Or I'm only interested in counting pitchers? That's
what's the distinction here? Why are these only pitchers? What
motivated the Tana to only be interested in these things? So, the truth is, it's hard to know. But you know, people in one of the things that you can observe about this Mishnah in general is this Mishnah seems to emerge almost from a different source a little bit, or either a different source or a different session, if I may call it that, because the Mishnah repeats Yei Nesach, right? Previously, the Mishnah was discussing Eilu Asurin Yei Nesach Asur V'Osa B'Choshu. It's talking about Avodah Zarah. And now the Mishnah says Eilu Asurin V'Osa B'Choshu, Yei Nesach is the first one, but then it goes on to other Isurim, and once you get past Avodah Zarah, it has nothing to do with our Masechta. So whether or not, whether this is editorially speaking a Mishnah taken from elsewhere, or, you know, it was a special day. It was right after Yom Tov. People hadn't flown back to the base of Medrash, so they decided to approach things from a different angle. So they only presented these things. But is it possible, Tosus is going to suggest, that just because the Tana doesn't list it, doesn't mean he disagrees with it. That is the possibility that's being considered here.
There would have to be more cases than you would argue. Use your analogy,
then
just coming to Pesach.
So here's where it gets tricky. So you're arguing that one exception. You're arguing the Gemara, when the Gemara sometimes says, when the Mishnah doesn't list every example, Tana Vashir. But the Gemara always asks, if the Tana taught a principle, taught the examples, but he didn't give a comprehensive list. He doesn't have to tell you every single example under the sun. But whenever the Gemara tries to give that as a teretz, Tana Vashir, the Gemara immediately asks the question, my shir, the high shir. In other words, you can't say that Tana left out only one thing. He'd have to leave out multiple things to indicate, yeah, he's not giving a comprehensive list. But if the Tana leaves out only one thing, it must have been deliberate because that thing doesn't really fit in the Mishnah. So, but the problem is worse than that, Larry. The problem is the following. Everybody agrees. Everybody, if you're going to say that the Tana just didn't bother to count something, that's a Davar Shebaminyan, even though it's Mutar Bahana. So what should then the din be by things that are Asar Bahana but are not a Davar Shebaminyan? The answer is the same. You'd have to say the Tana is not counting it, but it would also be Osir B'Mashahu. In other words, the Tana would be holding that both Davar Shebeminin or Isuri Hana are Oser B'mashu, but he was only interested in listing Davar Shebeminin, which are Isuri Hana. Now, if you skip again, I'm not going to read further in the Gemara right now. I just skip to the last line in the Gemara, Harei Elu, the last three lines, the last little piece. Harei Elu, Lemu'ute Mai. Lemu'ute, when the Mishnah repeats its principle, Harei Elu Asurin V'Osur M'choshu. Why does the Mishnah have to repeat the last line? That's how it opened. Elu Asurin V'Osur M'choshu. And now you say, Harei Elu Asurin V'Osur M'choshu. The Tana doesn't, he's not giving a shiur where he has to give a little chazara at the end. So what is he doing repeating that line? So the Gemara says, Lemu'ute Mai, what when we say Harei Elu, these are, but nothing else. Lemu'ute, what is it excluding? Lemu'ute Davar Shebeminin V'Lav Yisir Hana, Inami Lemu'ute Yisir Hana V'Lav Davar Shebeminin. So it certainly sounds like here that the Tana of the Mishnah is excluding both things that are only Aser B'Hana and things that are only a Davar Shebeminin. So Tosus comes along, Bibra Maschil, Lemu'ute Davar Shebeminin, and he says the following. Lechora, the first wide line in Tosus, Lechora Mashma, the Asa Lemu'ute, the Lohave B'Mashahu. And as it sounds like, Davar Shebeminyan, which is Mutar B'Hana, is not Oser B'Mashu. It has regular rules of Bittul, whatever those rules are. V'im Kain, Pliga Hach Dehacha, this Mishnah argues, on Lahi de Perakir Anasha, the Katani Hasam, de Chatichas Neve La'ena B'Tele Mishum Dehave Davar Shebeminyan, Afalgav, de Lohave Yisur Hana. In other words, if you're going to read the Gemara the simple way, that Harei Elu Lema'ute, Davar Shebeminyan, which is Mutar B'Hana, which is Batel, then we have a machlokas between our Mishnah and that Mishnah. V'kasha, d'im kain, hava leilu tamude la suyim asnis and dahacha ulemifrachiminei, dahasam ulemifrachiminei ahi dahacha. That's the case. The Gemara here should have said, ah, but reminhu, we have a stira because the Mishnah in Chulin says X, and this Mishnah says not X. So Tosa says, lekach nirali, lima'ute de ka'amar hacha, when the Gemara says lima'ute to exclude, Hainu delo chashiv hacha davar shebeminyan v'lavi surah hana. He doesn't count it. Shelo yorad lishnos rachecha de ikatarti. As it's not that the din is such, it's just the Tana was only counting things in this Mishnah. But ain't a chanami. The din might be they're also aser b'hana. The Chihe Gavni cites another example of this where the Gemara uses the term lema'ute, and the example is a correct example, where it's not that the Tana is disagreeing with other Tanaim. He just, there were different ways of listing things. Some were listing certain kinds of examples of Avos Nezikin, and others were listing broader categories of Avos Nezikin. So that's what Tosos says in this particular Tosos. Tosos says, when the Gemara says lema'ute, it doesn't mean to exclude it from the din, it means to exclude it from the list in the Mishnah. Okay.
He gives a reference to the Tosfos.
Yes, but I looked at the Tosfos, and I'm not really sure how it really changes things. There is something at the end of the Tosfos where he raises the possibility that the two sugyos do actually argue, but there's some I have a little trouble following what Tosfos is based upon there, his line of argument. I understand what it's based upon. The two Gemara seem to contradict one another, two Mishnayos. There's only one problem that I'll leave you with, we'll have to deal with next week, and Tosus himself knows it, which is, if you look at the beginning of the next Tosus, when the Gemara says, Inami lemu'ute isure hana, which are not a davar shebeminyan, hocha have vadai lemu'ute isure hana de lo have mimashahu, ela batel, kevin de lo have davar shebeminyan, ke de peirashti. So Tosa says here, this line definitely means something that's aser b'hana, but it's not a davar shebeminyan. It's just a fluid, a substance. It's batel. Bittul applies. So the next line in Tosas, which we'll pick up with talking about just a little bit, the beginning of next week's shir, is, then how do you read the Gemara? The Gemara says, lemu'ute A or lemu'ute B. When I say lemu'ute A to exclude A, it means it's not that the din isn't such by it, it's just I don't want to count it. But lema'ute b, it's not just I don't want to count it, it's not that the din isn't. In other words, it has to be consistent. You either have to say that none of it is batel of these two things, or both of them are batel. You can't say, davar shebeminyan is never batel, but isur hana are batel. It just doesn't fit with the language of the Gemara. That's why the Rif, by the way, obviously understood that these two sugyos are irreconcilable, and you have to choose one or the other. So as I said, one could have said, okay, we'll choose chulin over avodah zarah. Arguably, that might even be the primary place that, the topic is discussed. That's one of the criteria Rishonim sometimes use, that there can be a primary sugya and a secondary sugya. And here, I would argue this is really secondary to the perek. Whereas in Chulin, it's really primary. But you could argue, the Rif obviously thought otherwise, but it means pick one sugya or the other. But Tosus never likes to do that. Tosus likes to eat his cake and have it too. And Tosus says, no, the two sugyas blend happily together. They both agree. And of course, Davar Shebe Minyan is Aser, even when it's not Yisrei Hanah. Okay.